Welcome to the iPod, a podcast series from Ophthalmology Times, where we engage with key opinion leaders about the latest innovations in the areas of surgery, clinical diagnosis, drug therapy, research, technology, or practice management. Today's episode features age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. Here to discuss is Dr. Mary Elizabeth Harnett, a distinguished professor in ophthalmology and visual sciences at the University of Utah. Dr. Harnett highlights current research being conducted on the pathophysiologies of age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, involving very long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids, as well as new mechanisms for fibrosis in neovascular AMD.
Hello, I'm Mary Elizabeth Harnett. A number of basic research labs are working on mechanisms to discern the complexities of the pathophysiology of age-related macular degeneration. Omega-3 long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids from fish oil were tested in the age-related eye disease study 2, but did not further reduce the risk of progression of advanced AMD. However, recent studies from Paul Bernstein and his laboratory at the Moran Eye Center at the University of Utah found that metabolites of fish oil, omega-3 fatty acids produced by the ELOV-L4 enzyme, are deficient in AMD donor retinas. These very long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids are rarely consumed in a normal diet and were available for research studies in only minute amounts. In collaboration with chemists at the University of Utah, they synthesized gram quantities of these retina-specific lipids, and when they fed them to mice with or without ELOVL4 mutations, they found that visual function improved. These findings may have a role for treating diseases like AMD and a form of Stargardt disease with a mutation in ELOVL4. The pathophysiology of age-related macular degeneration is complex and involves many stresses that overwhelm homeostasis in the outer retina. This is evident since aging is the biggest risk, and AMD manifests late in life, even despite genetic predisposition. Although anti-VEGF agents have revolutionized outcomes in neovascular AMD, not everyone responds. And about 40% of these non-responders develop fibrosis. So our laboratory has identified a potential contributing reason for the development of fibrosis. Using experimental methods and models, we found that oxidized cholesterol, as an example, 7-ketocholesterol, similar to what accumulates in Bruch's membrane with age and in AMD, stimulates choroidal endothelial cells to change into mesenchymal cells that are more invasive and can contribute to fibrosis. Although RPE have been recognized as involved in the mesenchymal transition in the past, endothelial cells that contribute to CMV have not, especially due to this stress. We also identify potential therapeutic targets involving the TGF-beta signaling pathway to address fibrosis.
Next up, Dr. Mark Briezano, a vitreous and retinal surgeon at the Wilmer Eye Institute at Johns Hopkins. Dr. Briezano will be discussing how the COVID-19 pandemic has shaped the way ophthalmologists treat what AMD and what physicians can do to maximize the outcomes they can get for their patients.
So as we know, the pandemic has really transformed the way we practice everything from cleaning down our offices very meticulously to getting appointments right for our patients, to wearing masks, and when possible and safe, to get vaccines distributed to all of our patients who are at high risk. We know out of Columbia New York Presbyterian, there's been data that's actually shown that patients with age-related macular degeneration have a higher risk of mortality that's not explained by either age or sex. And a lot of this evidence points towards complement factor H, which is a critical molecule in the immune system or complement pathway, as we know that age-related macular degeneration is a complement-mediated disease. So there are definitely even increased safety concerns for our AMD patients in coming to clinic, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we should be stopping or hindering their ability to get these treatments and injections that are necessary for preserving vision. So we need to be cautious both in adhering to the safety measures, but also making sure that our patients are coming to clinic. Italian researchers have recently shown how there have been actually negative outcomes, at least in the short term, early on in the pandemic, with wet AMD patients due to postponement in visits during the pandemic. So it's absolutely critical that we make sure that we're being safe for our patients, but also there for them to treat their disease. It also seems opportune in terms of the time that we are on the research front as well, in regards to the treatments themselves. Right now we have our tried and true therapies of ranibizumab, bevacizumab, and aflibercept for treating wet AMD, but also newer therapies like brolucizumab that has come out. Now this extremely small molecule in brolucizumab has a potential for penetrating tissue more readily, and so has a very effective ability based on trial data of drying up the fluid in these patients potentially more effectively and with greater durability than our conventional treatments. However, our enthusiasm has been curbed a little bit by concerns for safety concerns with intraocular inflammation and retinal vascular occlusive disease. So we need a little bit more data before we feel very confident in treating many of our patients with this medication. But for a few select patients, it could truly be beneficial and vision saving. However, another exciting therapy is faricimab, which currently is in phase 3 clinical trials. Now this molecule, unlike the other therapies, actually targets not only VEGF-A, but also angiopoietin 2. And so by doing this, earlier studies through phase 2 results show that it may actually have a durable response in addition to being very effective at treating fluid and neovascular disease. And so this is particularly opportune during this pandemic and beyond, especially as we are trying to find therapies for patients that can go longer intervals with treatment. And so the longer the treatment intervals, the fewer visits they have to take, and therefore enhance the safety of our patients and improve their vision ultimately.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the iPod. We hope you subscribe at iTunes and let us know what topics you'd like to hear more about. Stay connected by going to ophthalmologytimes.com, subscribing to our newsletter, and following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.